Around Comics, Episode 74.
Presented by Borders.
Your heart pounds, your palms sweat, the tension is nearly unbearable. And then you spot it, the graphic novel you've been searching for everywhere, right here in your local Borders. Borders is your source for the best original graphic novels, manga, deluxe hardcovers, and trade paperback collections. Not only will you find exactly what you are looking for, you'll discover unexpected new authors and series. While you're at Borders, don't forget to check out their huge selection of music, movies, and magazines. Borders isn't just a bookstore, it has everything you need for your comics culture lifestyle. Now you can save on your favorite graphic novels, manga, and more. Google Borders for a valuable coupon, and always remember to check Borders first. To find a store near you, go to www.borderstores.com.
Absolutely. Thank you to the fine people at Borders. Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Christopher Naisman. Let me introduce you to the co-host of the show. First is my partner in crime, Mr. Brian Salazar.
Hello.
And our other co-host, Mr. Tom Cater.
Hey, now. That's for John.
Everybody, welcome aboard. I wanted to let everybody know about Around Comics at the New York Comic Con. As you know, the New York Comic Con is just around the corner.
Woohoo!
Yes, it will be at the Jacob K. Javits Center.
Oh, man, I'm going to get wicked drunk.
It's going to be the 23rd through the 25th, and we want to let you know that we are partnering with the Hero Initiative while we are there. The Hero Initiative creates a financial safety net for yesteryear's creators who may need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, please visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809. While we're in New York, we're going to be taking donations all weekend long at our table, and we asked a few people to give us a hand, and they said yes. And those people,
amazingly
would be,
enough,
those people would be from Athena Voltaire, Mr. Steve Bryant, and Jason Millay. We also have the author of The Other Side and Scalped, Mr. Jason Aaron, the artist of The Other Side, Cameron Stewart, the artist of The All-New Adam, and our good friend, Mr. Mike Norton, legendary comic creator Gene Colan, and by special arrangement from Vanguard Productions, Carmine Infantino.
Watch Tom sweat.
Go for it, Tom.
Sitting next to Carmine.
I'll be accepting donations at the bar.
We have a lot of announcements before the New York Comic Con, and I can say that we are going to have more creators signing, and you will hear about that on Monday's episode, so look forward to that. In addition to the signings, we'll also be auctioning off original artwork, sketches, and signed memorabilia from such people as Steve the Dude Rude.
The Rude Dude.
He's not rude at all. He's actually very gracious.
Gracious dude.
Mike Norton.
But that
Tim
doesn't sound
Seeley.
Too cool. It's like, Steve the Nice Dude Rude.
We also have stuff from Mike Norton, Tim Seeley, Scotty Young, Steve Bryant, Greg Titus, and more. So you can go to the New York Comic Con page at our website and take a look at all the sketches that we have. Steve and Janelle Rude are sending prints and signed books. We're going to have some Gene Colan books there that'll be
There's
signed.
A Greg Titus super scroll that looks amazing. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, there's a bunch of really cool art that I'm going to have a hard time, you know.
I have the sketches. They're making it to New York. Don't worry, everyone. Sal doesn't couldn't get his paws on the sketches.
We are taking the same flight, though. So.
I want to remind everyone that Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We'd love to meet you. While you're here, remember to ask about Dark Tower's pull list membership. It's certainly one of the best you will find anywhere. Dark Tower has a great selection of mainstream comics, independent comics, trades, as well as action figures and all of that good stuff. Come into Dark Tower for all of your comic and collectible needs.
And one of the best looking comic shop owners I've ever met.
Handsome. Strong, too.
And actually, you're going to be able, if you're in New York, you'll be able to meet Mark Bailey.
Mark is coming
to
New York.
I was trapped underneath the car and he picked it up.
Mark's doing a signing at our table.
He's our official table bouncer.
It's a 30-second signing, though. So.
So Mark will be there with us, so we're definitely looking for that. Remember to check out the Long Box of Love on this and every other Thursday episode of Around Comics. It is a wonderfully handcrafted webcomic by our listener and artist extraordinaire, Mr. Brian Bowles.
Is the new episode of the Crankcast out yet?
Yes, it will be when this airs.
Will be out? Because is that the one where we're going to be on it?
I believe so.
So check out the Crankcast because we're going...
We're going cranking.
We're going tomorrow to the Crank Cave to record an episode of
Actually, we have to go. Mike's going to pick us up, and we have to go blindfolded, apparently.
Oh, is it in the trunk?
Yeah.
No. He has a giant penny inside his apartment. John's been there, giant penny.
Yeah, I have.
Costumes of all his dead former sidekicks.
You'd be able to see a giant penny if it wasn't covered by the mountain of giant, cigarette ash and stuff. And his tobacco habit.
That, of course, is John Suntris. John's going to join us right after we're done with our interview with Cullen Bunn, which is going to be...
Because John doesn't know anything about interviewing. We didn't want him around. No. He's not... Nope. Good at it.
Didn't want him elbowing in on our action. I was on Derek Coward's comic book Noise last night. I talked with him, so take a listen to Derek and his fine podcast.
You're not supposed to do podcasts without notifying Tom and myself.
We have a system where two of the three of us have to be.
I abandoned
yes.
protocol.
It's just like being at Let It Be.
What's
going on? They're all upset with each other.
You can't just go do a podcast without saying something. Come on.
It was the last minute thing.
No. It's not how things work. We have rules. There's a system. For our safety and
yours.
You're
suspended.
Yes. Goodbye.
Goodbye. You're suspended.
Wow. All right, folks. Cullen Bunn. We've talked about The Damned for months now. It is one of my favorite new books of 2006.
One of mine, too.
I know, Tom.
And mine.
We all love it.
I even like it.
Even John likes it.
And if John likes it, it's got to be good.
You guys convinced me. You're like, you got to read this book. And I was like, hey, it's good.
It is a fun book. It has one issue left in its current miniseries format, which this story has been called 3 Days Dead. It is a fantastic read. Please check it out. And rather than us yammering on and on about it, we should probably just talk to Cullen Bunn. Cullen, welcome aboard, and thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It just seems like yesterday we were at Wizard World Chicago, and Michael Oliveri grabbed us by the back of our necks and said, hey, you've got to come over and meet a buddy of mine, and walked us over to your table, and we met you and Brian, and you guys were talking about this book called The Damned, which was going to be coming out, and we're like, okay, yeah another book.
Someday it'll come out. Yeah, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
I know.
but we saw the preview pages, and immediately I think we were all excited to see the finished product, and then you were kind enough to send a preview to us before it came out, and we were all just blown away by it. I guess the best place to start is for anyone out there that hasn't read The Damned. Can you give folks a quick setup of what the series is about?
Yeah, it's the way I've kind of described it is it's sort of like the old noir gangster movies, like the Maltese Falcon type of movie. Only the gangsters in this case are demons, and they're using the rackets to get people to sell them their immortal souls. So instead of going into debt money-wise when you make a bad bet, you're going into debt with your soul. but along the way, the demons are starting to, I guess, fall victim to their own vices. So they're starting to like these human vices a little more, more and more, and becoming less like the demons that they used to be.
Sure, I think what's interesting about the series is that with those human vices, it sets up the possibility of some of the human characters becoming friends with a lot of the demon characters. And so you actually start to, develop some sympathy for, some of the, I guess you call them the lesser demon thugs and whatnot. So it makes for some very interesting relationships.
Yeah, as we started, putting it together, we started kind of feeling like some of the demons may be more likable than some of the human characters. In some cases, even our protagonist isn't quite as likable as some of the demons.
Sure, and that protagonist is Eddie, who we follow. And Eddie has his set of unique problems, and I think that's a great part of the series. Why don't you tell folks a little bit about Eddie's quandary as we're introduced to him?
Well, there are three families of demons that are featured in this miniseries, and one of those families has sort of a unique way of dealing with people who cross them, and that's that they curse those people in various ways. Now, Eddie's particular curse is that essentially he can't die. He can die, but if anyone touches him after he's dead, his injuries will transfer to that person, and he'll rise back up in their place. Which, if you think about it, that's a pretty good curse to have.
Especially if you're a mobster.
Right, especially if you're a mobster. That makes him kind of useful to some of the gangs. But as he's starting to find out, there's probably a little more to that. There's more of a reason that's the way he's been cursed than he originally thought.
Well, I thought Eddie was such a great character myself because, with his unique abilities, he's the type of character you can use to stand up sort of against these demon families. He's not necessarily afraid of them, but at the same time, he's not sort of a super powered character that is running around, bashing heads in or people are afraid of him necessarily. I really enjoyed how you use that device to tell his story.
Yeah, that's kind of what I like about him too. I mean, he's kind of cagey and kind of slippery, but he's not. He has no other powers. He's not super strong. He just doesn't stay dead very well.
Yeah, it's like, what are you gonna do? Kill me? I've been there, done that several times.
One of the first thing that struck me when I read The Damned the first time was, it was such a great and beautifully simplistic concept, demons and gangsters. And, initially I thought, geez, why didn't I think of that? And I'm sure other people have too, or will once they read the book. But can you tell us a little bit about how you came up with the idea originally?
Well, if you ask Brian, it's going to, we're going to have different takes on how this story kind of generated. Originally, Brian called me one, and Brian worked on different ideas for different stories for years now. He called me one afternoon and said, I've got an idea for a story, and I think we should work on it together. And I said, all right, well, what's the idea? And he said, demon. And that was his big idea, demon.
Demons.
I love it.
Well, he's an artist, so he probably just wanted to draw demons.
Well, That's my side of the story. His side's probably pretty much exactly opposite of that.
You got gangsters and my demons. You got demons
exactly.
And my gangsters. It's delicious.
But we kind of started talking about this demon idea, and we pitched around different scenarios where we could use demons, but we both like this this era of the gangsters and Prohibition, and we thought those two would kind of fit well together. And I wrote down this huge, sweeping outline of a story and then realized it was just way too big for what we were trying to pull off. So we kind of toned that down a little bit and cut pieces out of that to tell this first this first miniseries, this first story arc, which is pretty different from what the first things I wrote down for this story.
Well, you know, what impresses me a lot about it is that a lot of times you will have, you know, going back to the concept, you'll have people that come up with interesting concepts for a book, and it a lot of times never goes beyond that concept, or it's so sort of strangled by just the concept, where in The Damned, it's much more than just demons and gangsters. I mean, there's a real story here about this character and the world he lives in and what he's trying to deal with. And, you know, it really goes beyond that. Was it something that evolved from that initial story you wrote down, or did it just sort of organically come out as you were trying to tell the tale?
I think it kind of just came out as we were trying to tell the story. We both knew we wanted this to be something different than just, I guess, a high-concept book, where it's just, you know, just the fact that there's some, you know, demons out there wearing fedoras. We wanted to kind of keep that. We really wanted to be really cautious in the way we presented the supernatural elements in the story. And in a lot of ways, we're just trying to tell a crime story, and the supernatural elements and the demons just kind of add to that.
Well, one of the things that I enjoy about the book is that it immediately had a very dense universe that it. And in good storytelling, that just kind of happens. It never felt forced, but, you know, you set up, you know, the different families, the different gangsters and their relationships with each other and friends. And so there's a very dense feel to the story. Did you kind of work, well, not backwards, but did you develop quite a backstory before you started writing 3 Days Dead?
We knew some of the backstory. And then I started kind of plotting out the arc, and that kind of opened up a lot of questions. We'd say, well, if this happens, why does this happen? And that kind of started filling in a lot of the blanks in the history, and in the world itself. So before I actually wrote the script for the first issue, we had a pretty good handle on what the story behind the story would be. And that helped us in that we're trying to sprinkle hints of things to come in this first 5 issues. So,
well, speaking of things to come, the first arc is, or I guess the first series is getting ready to wrap up, and that once again is called 3 Days Dead. First of all, are there plans to go to a trade? And next, are there plans to continue The Damned into a new series?
The trade, there are plans for a trade. I think that comes out in May, so it should be coming out in previews pretty soon here.
Great.
So, the first 5 issues will be collected in a trade paperback. And, yes, there are plans to continue the story of The Damned. It's just we've been talking to Oni Press about what the best way to do that would be, and I've been trying to work with Brian's schedule since he's got a lot of things going on, too. We just know that when we do the next portion, we want to do it right. So we don't want it to feel rushed We don't want it to feel choppy. But we do have 2 new story arcs already kind of planned out for The Damned.
You mentioned Oni Press. What was the process like? I guess I have 2 questions. One, is this your first comic book work? I mean, or have you done stuff in the past? And what was the process like pitching the book to Oni and that, you know, working with them, getting the book out?
This is really my first real comic work. I've got a couple of little 5 and 6 page, you know, strips that appeared in a UK small press magazine called Future Quake, but this is my first real comic, and as far as pitching it and getting in, you know, the process of getting out there, it Oni's been really great to work with. This isn't the first time that I pitched anything to them. It's not the first time that Brian and I didn't send them a proposal together. This was just the first one that kind of clicked for them, I think, right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And they had a few questions for us and wanted to make sure that you know, when they saw the proposal on a few, you know, six pages essentially, and a few of Brian's sketches, they wanted to make sure that we had more to the story than just, you know, a bunch of demons shooting and biting each other. So they had a lot of questions, pretty much about the world and what, you know, what the story behind the story would be. And after we answered those questions, they were really, really excited about the project, and you know, they pushed forward real quick to get it out there. So.
Well, you mentioned Brian, and we certainly should mention him. His artwork in this series has been fantastic. How did you guys hook up? Did you know him previously? Were you friends, or was it some other way that you guys started working together on this project?
Brian and I met actually working at a comic shop together. Probably, I guess, over 10 years ago.
Is that Fantasy Shop?
Yeah, the Fantasy Shop here in St. Louis.
I used to be a customer of their Maplewood store.
Why aren't you writing a book?
Well, that's where we first met. You know, even back then we were throwing ideas around for comics, and it just didn't come together for us back then to actually even get to the point that we could send some proposals out. After we left the Fantasy Shop, which is funny because one of the general managers there, I know one of the other employees said, I was talking to the general manager after you and Brian quit, and he said, well, the one person I would never hire again is Brian Hurt. And he said, well, what about Cullen? He said, well, the two people I would never hire again were Brian Hurt and Cullen Bunn.
You guys are spending too much time thinking about comics and not selling them.
Yeah, I mean, in a comic shop of all places, we were thinking, spending too much time thinking about comics.
Well, for our St. Louis listeners, which Fantasy Shop did you work in?
I started at the St. Charles store.
That's a big one.
When it was over on Main Street, actually.
Oh, wow.
It was like a little, it was in a really, an old building, very little space. They've moved now. The St. Charles store is actually in a much nicer location. It's real big and bright and pretty. And then I moved to the Hazelwood shop for a little while.
Great. Well, you know, Brian, of course, here's your obligatory Queen and Country reference. He was an artist on Queen and Country. Going back to the... Oh, shut up.
Can't go an episode without one of those.
With having, you know, Brian on board with the Dan... I would obviously think that helped with your pitch to Oni, with him being more of a known quantity with them.
Yeah, I was definitely the unknown with Oni. They knew Brian. He'd done several books for them, so that, you know, without a doubt, helped us get it onto their desk right away.
Sure. Well, I see him flexing some very different muscles in this series from anything else I've seen him work on before, though.
Well, yeah, I think it all comes down to he's having a lot more fun with this, maybe, than he's had with the things he's worked on in the past. So, and I think he's a little more vested in this. He helped come up with the idea of the world, and, you know, we spend a lot of time arguing over the way we wanted it to work out, so.
So do you think Oni is going to refer to you two as the two guys that he wouldn't hire back? Are you spending too much time thinking about comic shops now instead of comics?
Maybe.
We hope not. We hope not. Well, going back in the beginning, you had mentioned some of the films, you know, that you liked the era of that crime noir era. What other kind of stuff were you using as reference at all? You know, in developing the story or the look of the book, leading into it.
I think it comes down to just there's a whole lot of things that are influences for me, and then Brian's influenced by a completely different set of things. You know, a lot of things that are big influences for me are, you know, H.P. Lovecraft and a lot of horror fiction that I read. And Brian, he's got I'm sure he's got all his favorite artists that he wanted to kind of pay homage to, but he managed to do that in such a way that it's his own unique look. But I don't know if there were, it's sort of a mix of everything kind of that I've ever watched on TV or read in a book. All those things kind of come together for me and form these different influences.
There's a lot
Brian says I'm mainly influenced by 70s and 80s cartoon shows, but I think it goes a little further than that.
I would ask you to tell your friends about the Around Comics podcast, but let's face it, your friends are a little bit on the two-dimensional side, aren't they?
All right, we've got some forum posts, and we had a lot of folks that had questions for Mr. Bunn. Let's start off with one from David D. Says, there are a lot of cliches that have developed in many stories about demons, and especially stories about gangsters. Were there any cliches or conventions of either of these groups that you decided that you would definitely avoid or subvert in The Damned?
I embrace all cliches. I don't know that there were any we consciously decided to use or avoid, but to some degree, it's particularly when you're looking at a gangster book, if you don't follow some of the cliches, then you're not going to have a gangster story. So, if anything, we followed more some of the tropes for the noir fiction because we wanted it to feel more like that kind of gangster story. With the demons, I don't know that we followed any major stereotypes with them or cliches. We actually kind of tried to create more of our own world and our own history for them.
Sure. I think that's one of the reasons that the book works so well is that you do use so many of the cliches for the gangster side of it, but the demons are so different, except for some of the not dream sequences, but the death sequences. I mean, that's
right.
Very demon-like. But you use the hey wise guys and those
hitting the mattresses.
Yeah, hitting the mattress. Yeah. All of those great cliches, which really build up that gangster feel to it. But then you just throw the demons into that, and they just become a part of that, which is great.
And it was it's nice that. We were able to, with the three different demon families, we can get a little different feel for each of them. The two, the Allegheris and the Rorks, they're pretty much, leaning more towards the gangster side. And then with the Verloken, we kind of went more towards a very creepy, supernatural side with them.
Sure, and that leads in to a question from Dan C., also Papercut on our forum. And he says, regarding the origin of the names of the three families in The Damned, the Allegheri is obviously a well-picked name given the subject matter, but the other two have me stumped. Are these two just made up because they sounded good, or were they references to something else? The Rorik have the same spelling as Mr. Rorik of Fantasy Island.
Yes, of course.
And it's also very similar to the main character in The Fountainhead. But neither of these characteristics seem to lend themselves to the Rorik family. I've got no idea about the Verloken other than it sounds like something Lovecraft would have created.
Yeah, there's really no big story to the names except that originally the Rorik family were named the Oliveri family.
Nice.
After Mike. And as we started working on it, we said, well, I kind of got a little iffy that I didn't want two Italian-sounding names there. I didn't want them to get confused with each other.
And Mike sued you.
Yeah.
I think I looked up Celtic demons. I Googled Celtic demons, and Rorik came up at some point. I'm not even sure that's true, but I'm pretty sure I was Googling names, and
it's
that came
some,
up.
Some Irish guy whose nickname is the Demon.
Eddie the Demon Rorik.
Well, we've mentioned him twice, so we definitely need to give a shout out to Mike and his book. We're of course talking about Michael Avery, who writes Werewolves Call of the Wild from Moonstone, and you should definitely check out Mike's work because he is a good guy and a very good writer. Obviously, because he's a Bram Stoker winner. So
he's a real good guy, and that comic was awesome. And I promised him that even though I changed the name in The Damned, that somewhere in one of the other cities in the world, there's an Oliveri family. So
Werewolves.
Yeah, in Peoria.
Yeah. And the Verloken, their name, to be honest, I think it was just something I thought it sounded good. I thought maybe I could get something that seemed like a vermin sound to it. And I knew that I wanted, if I could have, I'd have called them the Flea Stacks, because that was kind of the inspiration for me, was the Flea Stack from Land of the Lost.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
Bill Lambier was a Flea Stack.
Was he?
Yep.
Why do you know that?
I just, whenever I hear Sleestak, I immediately think of
Bill Lambier.
Lambier.
Our next post was from Bam, and she said, Eddie is such a great character. I know you've written some other fiction, which I haven't had a chance to check out yet, but I do intend to go there. Does Eddie and the world of the damned figure in any of your other work? It's such a richly textured world. Was there a specific city slash place that inspired the setting? I don't want to let go of Eddie, so if he's new to the damned, is there any chance you could do a prequel?
Eddie doesn't feature, and the damned as a whole doesn't feature in any of the prose fiction that I've worked on. Although it is something I've kind of toyed around with the idea of working on, it'd be really cool to write a damned novel.
Oh, absolutely.
At this point, I haven't. He does, I can't tell you if he's going to make it through the first five issues or not, if he's going to be around to continue in the story. I really like killing off the main character.
But Eddie can't die.
I would suggest to Bam that maybe it's a she, right? Bam.
She. Uh-huh.
She
yeah.
should. Some fan fiction might be a good avenue.
The first damned fan fiction.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that'd be, yeah, that's my. That was my dream for the damned. That the next time I'm in at a big comic show, people would come up dressed as characters from the damned and have their own fanfic. I'm not saying that Eddie doesn't make it through, but I'm not also not saying that he has a very bright future ahead of him.
Aww. Well, I like Eddie.
He gets hit by a bus immediately after the last panel.
Well, Colin, I do want to talk about some of your prose work. I think that's your background, much like Mike. We actually talked to Steve Bryant on the way up here, and he said that we may see some Athena Voltaire prose from you.
Yeah, I started working on some stuff for that. That they're putting the Athena Voltaire anthology together, and I love that character, and I love that just. It's really my kind of world. That's one that I wish I could have, cursed them for taking my ideas. But that's one of the things I'm kind of working on right now. It seems like lately it's really tough for me right now because I've been working on comic stuff so much for the last year. It's really tough to get back into writing prose again.
Sure.
I think I'm starting to get the hang of it again, but It's been a little bit of a fight, which I didn't expect.
Well, I tell you what, you and Chris Somney gave us a heck of a tease, and Dustin Drace wrote in and said, "When is Freak Hunter going to see the light of day?"
One day is all I can say. I mean, Chris and I both. When I first met Chris, we went out and sat down and started throwing ideas around, and I just knew that when I said, here's an idea for a story, and it's called Freak Hunter. I thought he was probably going to just get up and walk away. But he actually loved that idea and started, sending me sketches of a character and sketches of freaks. And then I wrote the script for the first issue, and he did those first six pages or so that you saw. And I was just, I was just blown away by how he brought that world to life.
Sure. Is there a nicer person on the face of the earth than Chris Somney?
No, there really isn't.
I haven't found anyone.
Gandhi.
Gandhi God, than Jesus. Chris Somney.
Jesus and Chris Somney.
The Pope.
I don't think Jesus could do a really good Flash sketch, though, or postcard he sent me.
Colin, what's your secret for getting these extremely talented artists to work with you?
Guns.
Bribery.
Bribery.
Mind control, and
to be honest, Chris and I haven't been able to work on anything together yet because he's so damn busy all the time. And that's great.
He's busy doing Queen and Country commissions for me.
Yeah, you keep him busy. He did draw me into Queen and Country, which I liked.
Mm-hmm.
In one of the issues.
Bastard, I hate you.
So now I keep saying I want to write Queen and Country, and that guy becomes the hero.
Fan fiction, Colin.
Yeah, I know.
Fan fiction. That's my solution to all problems.
Just write your own
You don't
own
like
story,
it? Write your own story.
Write your own stories.
Yeah, well, that, you know, it's just from meeting, you know, Brian I worked with and Chris I met at a convention here in St. Louis. There's a whole lot of comic artists here in St. Louis, I'm starting to find out. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not as many as on the other side of the state in Kansas City, but
no,
St. Louis
no,
has a nice group.
We're going to try to catch up with them, I guess.
There you go. Be the only time St. Louis trying to catch up with Kansas City.
Oh, jeez. I got to hear it from two of you.
How about those Cardinals? Now, we have one more post here. This is from John Sokol. He says, I'm really enjoying The Damned. I'm not sure if I have any specific questions for Colin other than what's next.
Well, like I said, Brian and I are working on the next stories in the world of The Damned. It's just a matter of figuring out what the schedule for that's going to be and what format those will come out in through Oni. We just know that, you know, we are working on it. And then I've got a couple of other projects that I've been talking about with Oni and, you know, that they're interested in. It's just that, again, it's going to be a matter of there's been some discussion on what format we want to bring it out in and when to fit into their schedule because they've got a lot of books coming out this year already. So it's just a matter of when that's going to see the light of day.
All right. Well, any convention plans for you? Will we be able to see you in Chicago again this year?
Oh yeah, I'll be in Chicago. This is the first year I'm going to go to San Diego. Never been there before, but I'm going to go there. And those are probably the big shows that I'm going to go to this year.
Well, Colin, as always, it is a pleasure to talk with you. We love the series and can't wait to see how 3 Days Dead wraps up and what the future holds for The Damned.
Well, I really appreciate all the support you guys have given me and all the kind words about the series.
And thank you once again to Cullen Bunn. Always good to talk to Cullen. What a great guy. And thank you to Michael Oliveri for introducing us.
And if you haven't checked out The Damned, check it out. It's a really good book. I mean, for a first-time creator to come out and write something of its quality is pretty impressive. And it's fun. It's entertaining. It's good.
It's like Citizen
good,
Kane.
Great art.
He has nowhere to go but down.
Well, I'm sure
he's going to be doing really
he chose
bad
he
frozen chose peas commercials.
This copy is garbage.
That is my favorite celebrities at their worst.
If you can find that in the dictionary, I'll
Paul Masson
go down on you.
Paul Masson wines.
You really
want to
say? You really want to say in July?
12 months of the year. Everyone knows there's 12 months in a
I'm
year.
I'm giving
Why
the best possible read I can for the moment. That's the best. I
Orson
love
Welles, we miss you.
Mr. Sundress, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going, buddy?
That's good. That's good.
God, if you guys are too old for comics, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
You said that earlier. A few people
I don't think
remember.
Any... You can't be too old. You know, it's funny. I was watching... after we had talked to Brian Posehn and Jerry Dugan, that night I went home, turned on the TV, and I'm watching The Comedians of Comedy. And I swear, it turned it on to his routine. And but in that they talk about him and Patton Oswalt go mm-hmm. to a comic shop and he starts talking about how, you know, he shouldn't feel so bad about something that he enjoys so much, you know, but he feels guilty about it because he's like 40 years old or whatever and reading comics. It's like, why do you feel bad about it? Who cares?
No, they
you
didn't
know?
Have
like,
any bags and boards too.
Yeah, they were upset.
No, it's like, you're right. I mean, Bendis and I, Brian Bendis and I, when we talk about the Bendis tapes, we always bring it up. It's like, hey, man, if I'm on a flight and it's a long flight, you pull out your stack and you start reading comics. It's like, we're too old. We don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah, well, that's
the problem with that. It's too goddamn bad.
Yeah.
I'm reading my comic book here.
Read comics. Be
read
proud about
train.
It. Who cares?
Wear it as a badge of
exactly.
honor.
Exactly.
I wear your scorn as a badge of honor,
sir.
Yes.
America.
Well, some good comics for some old farts like us to read is pretty much anything by Alan Moore. And if you weren't aware,
this is
this is the year of Alan Moore at Around Comics. If you go to our forum, you can check that out. We started out in December with Swamp Thing, which was amazing. January brought us to Watchmen and the Complete Ballad of Halo Jones. I'm a little behind on that. I'm still catching up on my Halo Jones. February, we are now reading V for Vendetta and Skiz. I'm rereading
V
for
behind.
Vendetta. Are
I'm
you
gonna
behind?
Have to, I'm going to have to catch up in March.
Well, I saw the big tome coming up in March, so I I actually got a head start, and I'm about 50 pages into From Hell.
I was sort of giving notes on after every chapter of Watchmen I read.
I like
that. I just couldn't keep up with...
Cater's commentary?
Yeah, the V for Vendetta, I was just like, I'm an accountant this time of year. It's really bad. But I'm going to start up again with From Hell, because I'm going to start early with that one.
Well, that was the one thing about this whole,
year
of Watchmen, or year of Alan Moore that we're doing, is like, it didn't have any sort of... output. It was just like, we're going to read these books, but what are we doing about it? Like, we don't really talk about it on the show very much. We don't, we haven't really talked about it on the forum, that we should, like, try and figure out another way to, I don't know if every month
celebrate
we should,
the year of Alan Moore?
Well, I don't know. Just maybe, like, recap it at the end of the month or something.
Yeah, then people would hold me accountable to keeping up with this stuff, and it's tough.
Well... True.
Are people keeping up on the forums?
I picked up the From Hell hardcover and the annotations in the back. And Scott Cederland, one of our great listeners that does Pop Syndicate, suggested, and this is how I'm doing it, to like read a chapter.
Oh, I'm going
to
be on his show next week. I forgot to tell you.
You got to clear that first. We all know that now. But Scott suggested read a chapter, then read the annotations in the back,
that's
and then
cheating.
Go back and read the chapter again. And it really does make for what is already a dense read a lot more
dense,
denser.
Not dense.
More dense.
It makes it easier to follow and keep character
transparent.
Straight. So anyway, From Hell in March, and then April. Look forward to A Small Killian and Wildcats. What has already been called on the forum as one of the weaker months, but we're gonna do it.
Oh, snap! Small Killian's okay.
Well, speaking of Alan Moore and Watchmen, Tom, who watches the Caters contest?
Who watches the Caters? More importantly, who watches Tom when he orders things online? Apparently no one, including Tom. He ordered 2 copies of Absolute Watchmen after a long day of drinking and watching football. The Packers won that Sunday, so I was happy. Instead of returning it, he is going to reward
a lucky
listener.
You know what
else
I was happy about? That Brett Favre's coming back.
Yeah.
Another year of suckitude for the Packers.
He was pretty decent last year.
It wasn't his fault that they didn't win.
Hey, he's just adding more stats to that Hall of Fame career.
Exactly.
And, keeping
he
more
needs
space
to get that touchdown record
kids.
For Marino, because Marino's a dick.
Wow.
Dang.
Like, damn, Marino listens to this podcast.
Maybe.
You never know.
One of his kids.
What if Boomer Esiason does and tells him about it?
One of his illegitimate children might.
I was LARPing the other night listening to Alarm Comics.
I was doing live action role playing.
How disappointed would Dan.
I bet you Boomer LARPs. I guarantee you, if anyone at the quarterback club, it's Boomer the LARP.
Oh, no, you know what? You know who it's going to be? It's going to be Chris Collinsworth.
I got to tell you, I played an elf the other day, and it was just fantastic.
Anyway, I ordered 2, and instead of returning, I'm going to give it to you. And the way you can get it is by writing me a paragraph about a theme from Watchmen that ties into a current book that you read. And I actually have an entry for
you. Don't forget the extra bonus that we got in the mail last week. You also get a an original Chris
Rorschach.
Outstanding. So
you can see it
good.
On our forum. If
you
go
can't
there,
get you a, can. A piece of Dave Gibbons art, this is a nice, let me tell you.
Get you some
well, we here. Tried, but Dave wasn't very...
Well, yeah.
All right, go for it, Tom.
This is from Blue Meanie.
Oh, hey.
He's on the forums.
It's our Welsh listener.
Is he Welsh?
He is Welsh. He is from Wales.
Well, he's a Welcher?
Here we go. Not many people know this, but the main theme of Watchmen is that dogs are evil, and this theme is also echoed heavily in Dark Knight Returns. The smiley face symbol used throughout Watchmen is obviously reminiscent of a blood-stained squeaky dog's toy, and spiked collars worn by the mutants in Dark Knights are again symbolic of the aggressive nature of dogs. And Watchmen,
Rorschach.
Is shown wandering the streets looking like a vagrant, and is also revealed to wear lifts in his shoes, telling us he is short.
Spoilers!
This character is therefore a direct reference to the Littlest Hobo. Batman is shown aged and is constantly shouting, an obvious reference to Old Yeller. Doc Manhattan constantly gives us hints as to what will happen in the future, which could be referred to as Blue's Clues, and in Dark Knight, Superman is referred to as the President's personal attack dog. I will conclude with a direct quote from Watchmen that again shows all things lead towards the canine. I'm going to look at the stars. They are so far away, and their light takes so long to reach us. All we ever see of the stars are their old photographs. I'm 227 million kilometers from the sun. Its light is already 10 minutes old. It will not reach Pluto for another 2 hours.
Pluto. Okay.
It all goes back to the dogs. Wow, Blue Meanie, you are insane. Thank you for that, though. That was very, very
yeah. He is there. Clever. Clever in Wales.
I have a good one for next Monday.
Uh-huh.
Not the one you already heard, but the next one. I've got a bizarre. The person that sent the bizarro one resent it to me.
Okay, so great,
cool.
Can't wait to hear it. Speaking of other stuff that we can't wait to hear, our good friend Stephanie Mongold.
The worst fucking segues.
Speaking of things we can't wait to hear.
Speaking of
everything. Yeah, that was bad.
I've seen attachments like that. You know, since I used to use duct tape to like put everything together in college, man.
All right, our first manga report.
From Stephanie Mangold.
From Stephanie Mangold. Careful. Here it is.
Hey, gang! Let me show you something!
One more time!
Hello, Chris Sale and Tom of Around Comics. This is Stephanie Mangold, also known as Hey Supergirl, Silver Bullet Comics columnist, with your first ever manga report. First off, we're going to begin with some news, starting with three titles from Viz Media. Their popular manga, Death Note, has recently been awarded an honor by the Young Adult Library Services Association. It was placed on the list of the top 10 graphic novels for teenage readers for 2007. It was the only manga title to make the list, and this is a phenomenal accomplishment for manga titles, finally gaining some recognition and being noticed for the strong appeal that they have to teenagers and their ability to tell quality stories in a sequential art format. Also noted by the Young Adult Library Services Association were Nana and Monster, also released from Viz Media. They were placed on the list of great graphic novels for teens for the year 2007. All three are excellent titles. You should be sure to check them out. Now we're going to move on to some news from Tokyo Pop. Everyone is anxiously anticipating this year's New York City Comic Con, and now's one more reason to look forward to the event. Tokyo Pop is going to be sponsoring a cosplay contest. For those of you who don't know, cosplay is short for costume play, which is dressing up as your favorite manga or anime or video game character. And this contest is for the new American manga, My Dead Girlfriend, written by Eric Wright. And you have to dress up as the main female protagonist, Jenny Wraith. And it will be judged at the Tokyo booth, which is number 731. That's number 731. The winner will be announced on Sunday, February 25th. It will be voted on by viewers at tokyopop.com. And the prizes are as follows. All cosplayers are going to receive a copy of My Dead Girlfriend, signed by creator Eric Wright. The grand prize is a coffin full of manga, including the coffin, which is 150 books. That's a lot of manga. I think it would take me, a day and a half to read that. The creator's favorite prize is going to receive an original piece of art as you cosplaying as Jenny, drawn live by Eric Wright himself. Friday's fan favorite will receive 40 of Tokyo Pop's latest releases, and Saturday's fan favorite will receive the same prize, 40 of Tokyo Pop's latest releases. If you're looking for more details on this event, go to tokyopop.com, where you can also preview My Dead Girlfriend. Our last piece of news is for all you toy collectors out there, and it comes from DC Unlimited, a new branch launched by DC Comics. Their first acquisition as a toy company is the rights to reproduce the toys from the popular anime and manga series, Afro Samurai. Afro Samurai recently debuted January 14th on Spike TV and will be released this May by Funimation Entertainment. It is adapted from the original manga by Takashi Okazaki and has been a smash hit with fans in the States. The toys are going to be offered by DC Unlimited throughout U.S. and Canada, and the first series will be shown at the American International Toy Fair held in New York in February of 2007. That's it for the news. Moving on, we're going to take a brief look at some of the titles to be released this week and last. We have the fifth volume of the popular shoujo manga, Nana, the first volume of a new shoujo manga to be released called Kitchen Princess. Tasty. The second volume of Welcome to the NHK, as well as the second volume of the spicy yaoi manga, Princess Princess. And my personal favorite to be released recently, the 17th volume of Bleach. For those of you who are not aware, Bleach is a popular shonen, that's boys manga, to be released by the mangaka Tite Kubo. It's up to about 37 volumes in Japan. The 17th has just been released in the United States. It's also an anime series being shown on Adult Swim right now, licensed, both the manga and the anime, that is, are licensed by Viz Media and available for purchase right now. I believe the first volume of the anime series is out, and like I said, up to the 17th volume of Bleach is out. Be sure to check it out. It's a wonderful series, fan favorite. Love it. And finally, I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about a manga I've fallen in love with recently, Tuxedo Jin. Tuxedo Jin is the heartwarming story of a young man named Genji. He's 17 years old, a little rough around the edges, professional boxer, and he's recently fallen in love for the first time with a girl named Minako. And tragically, the day before their first date, he's attacked, falls into a river, and dies. He goes to heaven, and apparently it's not Genji's time to die. However, he's caused kind of a rift in the time-space continuum, and the only way he can get his body back is to live out the life of a penguin, kind of like paying penance, reincarnation, that kind of deal. So he goes back to Earth to live as a penguin, and note, he cannot commit suicide, he cannot wish for death, he must naturally live out his life as a penguin in order to properly return to his natural body. And who should he find in his penguin form but Minako? He washes up on the beaches, she discovers him, takes him in, and affectionately names him Jin-chan. Genji, of course, at first thinks that this is an affectionate play on his name, when really it's a play on the word penguin, Peng-jin, I guess. It's a really sweet romantic comedy, very funny, very silly, and it's just really an enjoyable read. It's actually kind of long. There's 15 volumes, all of which are out in America, and all of which are available online or at your local Borders. I strongly recommend picking it up. It's an extremely enjoyable romantic comedy. And I think that's all I have for today for Around Comics First Manga Report. And don't forget, you can get all these titles that we've talked about today at your local Borders store. If they don't have them on the shelves, just be nice and ask for them to order it. They'll do it. All right. See you again. Bye.
Hey, thank you, Hey Supergirl. That is our first manga report from Stephanie Mangold.
I'd like a Taibo to that theme song you got there.
You like that?
Billy Blanks would be very happy to come up with a routine next time.
I'd like to see you, Taibo.
Japanese.
I don't know if I want to see John Taibo.
I bet Chris Consworth is big into cosplay, too.
Man, I'll tell you what. I was in this.
Dressed as my dead girlfriend.
Collinsworth hate, man.
I love Collinsworth. He's the best.
He is the best.
You wouldn't know it.
He's not the only guy I saw that picked the Bears in the Super Bowl, so.
Yeah, that dumbass.
Rush Limbaugh did, too. Oh, I like the Bears.
Rush Limbaugh also thinks Rex Grossman's getting shit because he's white.
Yeah. Oh, that's just, yeah. That's
different podcast.
To balance it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, save that for the comic book haters.
It's a tough
podcast
job
you're doing next week.
Being a white quarterback.
Oh, so anyway, look forward to more manga reports from Stephanie in the future. Hopefully we're going to do this at least once a month. We would ask you to help us spread the Around Comics love. There's a few different ways that you can help us out with that. The first is the Listener LCS Challenge. If you go to aroundcomics.com, click on the Listener LCS Challenge. You can download a flyer there. Ask your local comic shop.
Take a flyer, kid.
Manager, keep owner, whoever. To display that in the store. If they do, we will mention you and the shop on the show, like G-Dog last week, and was it Tardy?
Tardies.
Up in Grand Rapids.
Which was ironically Jeffrey Brown's childhood shop.
Which was really
right?
We had him on the show. He's like,
oh, that's funny.
Was that just coincidence? And we're like, yeah, we
didn't. I don't think
so. Yeah, it was, well.
You can also give us a dig at dig.com. You can become our virtual friend at Comic Space, which is comicspace.com/aroundcomics.
Are we ending the show?
No.
Oh, it just sounded like you were reading the end of the show.
No, your end notes.
Yeah. No. We have a lot of notes.
And
we have a lot.
And you can also do my favorite, which is leave us a review at the iTunes Music Store. You can be as cool as Andy Parks,
or
Steve
Mike Norton.
Bryant. Mike Norton.
Mike
Norton.
These sons of bitches, man. They say that they're my friends. They don't leave me guys.
Well, are they your friends or your virtual friends?
Well, that's comic space. I'm talking about the iTunes.
Talking about
you guys
real
did.
Life.
God bless you. Thank you. And I, of course, reciprocated in my nom de plume.
Not in your real
name. Bert Wheeler.
Bert Wheeler.
Bert Wheeler is my code name online.
You've been outed.
It's my porn name, Bert Wheeler.
Porn name.
I'm Bert Wheeler. I sell.
His Tybo chocolate chip porn name.
Exactly.
God.
I'm from Akron. I sell rubber products.
Well, hey, guys, let's hit a quick listener email. And it is a quick email, but I think it can lead to a lot of. yeah, Bert Wheeler.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this can lead to a lot of discussion. It's from area code 212.
I'm glad we're squeezing.
I was going to try and read this as Christopher Walken, but I can't. So I'll read it as me. Here's a topic. This is from area code 212. Here's a topic suggestion. I can't even read it as me. Here's a topic suggestion. The history and pros and cons of the direct market. Keep up the great work with the podcast. That's it.
There you go.
Direct
market.
Wow. Yeah, that would
good,
be
bad.
Initially a great, great thing.
Yeah.
Late 70s.
And
Phil,
now it's
Phil
past
Suling?
Its
isn't that right, Mark?
Prime.
Was it Phil Suling, the direct market guy that really kind of started the thing going? I think it's Phil Suling. He was a comic.
We would have to
correct,
research
correct me
for
if
that
I'm
show.
Wrong. Forum, feel free, but I believe it's Phil Suling.
Phil
who started
Suling?
The whole
Sulu.
Comic craze.
Sulu.
S-U-L-I-N-G.
Well, I mean, the whole direct market.
A topic suggestion.
I mean, that started as comics started becoming collectible, and you started having stores that opened up selling back issues.
Yes.
Wasn't that kind of what spawned the direct market?
Yes. Yeah, and then the great thing was the publishers responding and suddenly, you know, really coming out with product specifically for the direct market. And, God, I remember, I mean, you had Batman and the Outsiders and the new
Teen Titans.
Mm-hmm. You know, coming out a good 3 months in the direct market before in Infinity Inc., yes, before they would come out on the newsstands. And plus, I mean, that's when Epic really kind of got going for Marvel and the fantasy magazine that they published. And
it's probably when a lot of
the underground comics. Well, that's what
started,
I was going to say. Without the direct market, you never would have had the underground boom that you had in the 80s, really.
In the 80s, I would agree.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, like, Crumb and those guys.
Well, no, that was.
They needed head shops.
Yeah, they had head shops. sure.
Which are kind of like early precursors to the direct market.
In its own way. Yeah, but I don't think those guys were coming in. They were coming in more for bongs. They weren't coming in for...
check out this crazy comic, man.
I really need the Flash, man.
That's how Tom asked for it every week.
It was great. I mean, you know, I remember, God, just as a kid, that was so exciting to actually have, like, a store that was really dedicated to comic books.
Well, this is, you know, we were talking about, you know, are we too old to read comic books? But it's kind of funny. I've always gone to a direct...
Really?
Comic shop. A drugstore
was my first experience.
Yeah, mine too. 7-Eleven.
I had a 7-Eleven and a drugstore right next to.
I was in Wilmette, and there was an Alpine Pharmacy that was on Skokie Boulevard, and they had a spinner rack.
I mean, I went to a newsstand when I was a little kid, but when I got like 8, 9 years old, there was a comic where you had Larry's.
When I was 10,
Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, right? Both in Rogers Park, basically.
Yes. But, you know, those were, you know, that's the thing.
We're talking,
Chicago,
we're in the suburbs.
Yeah, and even, like, the burbs.
When I turned 10 was when I found out about the first comic shop in my area, which was Unicorn Comics, which is still there. And I think that was the first one. And then after soon after that, there was a shitload of them that showed up that just popped up. Most of them are gone now. There's a couple. There's about three of them in... driving distance of where I live.
Yeah, I really didn't discover them until like 13 or 14, and that was 79.
Right around the time he discovered girls.
And he picked comics.
Exactly, like a fool.
Comics never say no.
But it was just this great thing. And then, yeah, the burbs, because I think Chicago was so close, we had Moondogs, of course, things like that in the city. But then, you know, the burbs really did start happening.
Yeah.
And there were more stores, and it was fantastic.
Well,
I grew up in
rural Illinois, southern
farm
Illinois.
Town.
Farm town, exactly. But was lucky enough that Carbondale was just, you know, 13, 15 miles away, which is a big college town. And so anywhere there's a college town, you're going to have comic shops.
Sure.
And Campus Comics in Carbondale started up another store in Marion.
How far was Metropolis from
Carbondale? Oh, gosh. about a day as the crow flies. I don't know.
About a day as the crow flies?
Well, Roy Clark, while we're on the subject.
I don't know the mile. Metropolis is probably about an hour away.
Oh, it's still an hour away? Because I was wondering if they had, given their connection to Superman that they love so much, if they immediately like jumped on the direct market wagon. If
I have no idea.
Well, the crazy thing is, when you're in Southern Illinois, when you buy a train ticket or a bus ticket, it's all measured in crow's flights.
Oh, sure.
All of it is.
How many crow's flights is it to Muskegee?
Well, it's 1 week with a strong crow.
Yeah, so I've never really known comics without the direct market. So, I know we had when we had John Byrne on, we asked him, you know, what some of the biggest changes in comics were, and he talked about the direct market. Sure. And you know, whether he said it at the time, you know, he was, I don't think, ever a fan of the direct market. He saw a lot of the pitfalls with it from the beginning.
Well, yeah, because I mean, you know, when they decided to give up distribution on newsstands, it did kind of hurt circulation, and I think out of sight, out of mind, because mm-hmm. it went from being something that was there with other mass media periodicals to this, you know, private club that in some ways was really exciting, and I think a lot of product innovation came of it. Mm-hmm. But again, you lost a lot of mass media distribution, and I think comics have paid for it since.
Well, I mean, here I think is the interesting question. You know, there's no question that sales are down in comparison to pre-direct market. I mean,
certainly.
They're not selling, you know, routinely 100,000 copies. It's not like a cutoff mark anymore for cancellation. But are the comics better, the actual craft of comics better because of the direct market?
I'd say different. And I don't know if, I mean, because again, it's more adult audience.
Because you can get away with stuff in the direct market that you maybe can't get away with on newsstands.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think, you know, again, if you go back to things like what Warren was putting out in the 60s and creepy and eerie and stuff like that, they had some pretty strong meat as far as violence and gore and things like that.
I think it's to the point where you can't separate the, you can't make an easy separation of the two necessarily. I don't think you can say that comics are better now because of direct market. I think
they're different.
It's just different, and I think it's been that way for so long now that it's hard to say this is because of this.
Well, but I think, you know, when Chris says, I mean, certainly comics today, as far as artistically, and I'm talking in big generalities here,
the craft.
But the way that they're just done better, in my opinion, as far as storytelling is better today than it was. I mean, not to say, you know, it's like, you know, I enjoy books from 40 years ago, but to compare one the way it's written then to the way it's written today, as far as a storytelling
I think it's different.
I don't think there's any reason to think that if it wasn't direct market that also wouldn't be written.
I think it's I think it's an indirect side effect of the direct market that they are what they are today. I think because the direct market created a culture of us, mm-hmm. you know, that have now grown up with comics, and now comics are different because they're still directed to us.
We already talked.
Yeah,
we already
not directed like an indirect, to it's sort of an
indirect
way,
effect.
But
it's
we talked about the alternative comics, you know, revolution or boom or whatever the hell you want to call it. You know, that may not have taken place without the direct market, and I think definitely without the alternative comics of the 80s that comics today. I mean,
I don't know if I agree with that either because
I think the underground comics of
and not
of
only that I mean you had comics
just fine without direct
before okay. that. I mean, you talk about, you know, we talked about EC comics
exactly
all and that stuff today would be considered alternative or, you know, underground kind of stuff.
And I would
at
also
the time
the
it was mainstream.
Right.
You know, it was
and I
everywhere.
Point to the quality, too. So I mean, that's the thing. If you say, you know, is the storytelling better? Is the art better? Well, I don't know.
I'll
take Wally Wood over a lot of guys today. Wow. I'll still take a lot of those guys over lot of the crowd.
Yeah, artistically.
Well,
probably,
I mean, and again, I think from a story standpoint,
and there's just a lot more today.
Well, and they were telling 8-page stories as opposed to the multi-arc stories that were given today. It's a different story.
I think there's a thing where there's all these different things that go into this. What we expect from a story is different. What sort of quality you can get from a story is different. And all these things, it's all a mix. There's so many different factors of mm-hmm. why books today are different from books 40 years ago beyond just direct market. I mean, it has to do with presentation, with printing ability,
yes.
with the money that's involved. There's
Absolutely.
All these sort of things that sort of
licensing.
Go into it. Yeah.
It's they're either there's going so for, many things going on.
They're going for a different type of artist too. There were guys like Dick Dillon who did decades on the Justice League because he could crank out a book so fast, and that's why he was always there. Now we accept a Jim Lee or a Gene Ha that takes his time. We generally
Tom doesn't accept
well,
them.
The publishers do.
The publishers do, exactly. And they're willing to wait because they know eventually it's going to be traded and it's going to be different. And that's what I'm saying. It was a different product back
it's
then.
Different.
It was a,
yeah,
it was a disposable product back
there's
then.
So many and weird you know, things that have
yeah, I'm not trying to. So, I'm not like trying yeah. to compare the two and say, you know, today's comics are better than comics 40 years ago. I was just saying, you know, on a sort of a craft level. I mean, there seems to be a lot more craft put into comics today than there were at that time. I mean, you talk, you know, EC Comics, the art in those books are phenomenal, but those stories were written, you know, plotted out after maybe, an hour idea.
Well, again,
nowadays, you know, comics are, you know, the storytelling in them is much more developed.
And the deadline was tantamount back then.
Absolutely.
As opposed to now, it's no.
So you're
finish the product when it's ready, we'll wait. The market will wait.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. It's a different
market.
It's
a different monster.
So that's the thing. And again, it's a byproduct of the direct market. So,
but it's not like that's what, you know, the direct market wasn't created because of that. There was never that in mind.
I mean,
I think it was an accidental side effect.
The direct market didn't just appear for no reason, though, either. I mean, there's reasons why the direct market was created. It's very complicated. I think there's a lot of things.
It's much too much for us.
Don't forget, too, that it was cheaper to rent a store back then and commercial space to have this business that you were doing out of your car or, you know, taking to conventions on the road to suddenly have a brick-and-mortar place where you could put your back issues and sell them. Well, obviously, you know, the real estate market has certainly changed, I think, commercial property, and that's why we had the boom of the direct market, and now we're at a point where the better stores survive and the lesser ones don't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Well, I'm glad it's a direct market because it would be really hard to do the show at, like, 7-Eleven.
They wouldn't let it keep kicking us out.
Could you keep the Slurpee machine down, please?
This is the rotisserie, the hot dog rotisserie is making a lot of noise.
It's getting some feedback.
But it's a very good question, and maybe we'll have to do a whole.
That's like the longest conversation of like a one sentence question that we've
had. That's a good question.
Oh, that's eight shows.
Dude, you blew my mind.
You blew my mind.
Do we want to read this last one?
Sure, go for it.
Okay, this is from Vicious Smith. And he said, I dared to read the Marvel solicitations for April 2007, and I had to read I had to read the Black in Black. Back in Black.
Spidey?
It reveals the reason behind Spider-Man being in a black suit. It's not just because of the movie, and it doesn't seem to be a symbiote. My question is who do you think was killed? Was it Mary Jane or Aunt May? Could it be J. Jonah Jameson who dies? I guess it has to be Mary Jane because that's the least imaginative move. J. Jonah Jameson getting killed would be more shocking and would be a greater turning point for Peter Parker.
I think it's Flash Thompson.
Oh, no, Flash, we hardly knew ye.
Is he still alive?
I think he's still alive.
No.
Was Flash dead?
Wait.
No, he's alive.
Oh, he is alive.
Again? Wait. He died, though, once, didn't he?
Betty Bryant.
Bryant.
Anita Bryant. I could care less.
And I believe Anita is dead and Betty is
why he's having a black costume. I don't really care that he's having...
But apparently somebody important to Peter dies. But
well, we saw in the last issue that was out,
Mary Jane
and Aunt May
in the scopes.
It could be either...
And certainly
MJ
the
I got Aunt May in the
in the Deadpool
in the pool. Yeah.
Well, I had Anna Nicole Smith, so I win.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't know.
That was very good.
Personally, I always and I had talked about this a long time ago. When Mark Millar was doing his run on Spectacular, was it Spectacular?
No, it was the Marvel Knights Spider-Man.
Marvel Knights Spider-Man,
which was awesome.
Which was a great run, except at the end of it. There's a very long storyline about Aunt May being kidnapped and
buried alive,
and I just thought that story would be so much better if at the end she had died, and not because I wish any ill will towards her, but I just feel that like
you Aunt May hater.
No, I just think that in my opinion, to make it a more interesting character, Spider-Man or Aunt May should die. Mary Jane should have a kid. And then you have an evolution of a character.
I don't want Spider-Man ever to have a child. I'm sorry. And I understand Spider-Girl is an exception. I like the fact that it's kind of an alternate universe. That's okay. I think Peter Parker needs to be the young, in his 20s, guy. I think the marriage was a mistake. They're kind of stuck
with
it.
Wow, listen to Joe Quesada over here.
No, I agree, though. I mean, and it's the same reason why, as much as I like...
How is it a mistake, though? It's a choice. It's a writing choice that...
It was a writing choice that was done because they felt they needed to shake things up.
Right.
They did, and I don't know
and
if
And now they're looking to shake things up again because
yeah, but again,
it's played itself out.
Relationships that it cancels.
Tom and I...
Having Felicia, having all the women in Spider-Man's life. That's why Ultimate Spider-Man is this breath of fresh air where you have a Kitty Pryde and you have somebody new in Peter's life that he can contend with that we're not used to seeing. And I mean, just why Daredevil is always so interesting, because each relationship brings its own set of problems.
Always brings problems.
And I also think that they in Superman, they and not to deviate too long from Spider-Man, but to say there were great possibilities with the reinvention of Lana and her place in Superman's life that are canceled out by him being married to Lois. And yeah, Superman would never break up with Lois, of course not. And you're not going to kill Lois Lane. You're not going to kill Mary Jane. Or maybe they will. We'll see what happens. But it would be a shame to get rid of Mary Jane completely, because there's just a whole cycle. There's a cycle of readers, and I think that these characters need to be vital
for each new generation
of readers. And you have to be able to turn around and have Mary Jane out of the picture for a while, then to be able to come back.
But I mean,
that does exist, though.
I mean, there is Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there is a book where he is.
No, and that's fine. But
Tom and I sat in on the Comic Book Queers podcast talking about, you know, heterosexuality.
I don't feel like the comic book whore that you guys are, the podcast whore that you guys used to make me out of. You guys are in all the fucking podcasts.
Well, this has been months ago, John.
But the subject
came up, and we were talking about the relationship of Peter and these women in his life, and how, you know, May was always there because he needed to make a decision of, I have to either save the city or save my aunt.
Get my aunt her medicine.
Well,
yeah. And so that's what May was always there for. Then whenever he married Mary Jane, that's all his relationships have been. But this is what's interesting. Gwen Stacy, Mary Jane.
Well,
they're
all the same
responsibility.
But
they're all interchangeable. That's what I mean. It's like you don't need two of them.
Exactly.
You
have to look at what May has turned into, and I think that Straczynski's actually done an interesting job in the last 6 months, year or so, that May is no longer, you know, the frail person that needs to be saved that Peter has to make a decision about.
She's
the voice of reason.
Right.
And who is May turned into now?
Uncle Ben.
She's Uncle Ben.
Absolutely. That's great. But that's good. That's evolution as opposed to...
So they should kill her.
May.
Yeah.
They should kill both of them.
I think they
should... Well, that'd be fine, too.
Kill Spider-Man.
No, I understand.
Make a new Spider-Man.
I just think
Spider-Man Jr.
I think having the responsibility of having an aunt, an elderly aunt and everything, or an elderly mother or whatever, I think that plays into the responsibility equation of Peter Parker.
Speaking of that, I have to call my elderly aunt.
I
actually really kind of like the dynamic of the three characters right now.
Me too, and that's what I'm saying. I don't want to see that end, and I also think that it's like taking a tool away from a writer when you...
You could come up with another one in a heartbeat.
It's just an actor.
All he has to do is make another relationship, whether it's a teacher or a...
Replace Aunt May?
Sure, in a story.
You guys want to find out what happens to Aunt May or Mary Jane? Maybe neither one of them gets killed. They just both get slightly hurt.
They're slightly hurt.
It's like you'll be able to find out at the website, and you should check out all the great things that Around Comics
they will
has to offer. Yeah, once it happens.
Once it happens, we'll be all over it.
It's your source for the best in comic book news, reviews, and opinions.
Still think you should have a kid.
While you're there, please take a minute to fill out our listener survey. We'll ask you whether you think Mary Jane or
Spider
Mary
Baby
should die.
Spider Baby.
Yes, definitely. Chime in about it on the forum.
And it comes
out with eight arms. We are members of the Comics Podcast Network. You can find more great podcasts, but not Word Balloon.
No, sir.
Hey, this is a scab. We got a scab.
Alone.
This is a union podcast, buddy.
I know.
You can find out more about all those great podcasts at comicspodcast.com.
I respect all the people, the members of the Comics.
Just so that everyone is aware, we post the next week's topic on Tuesdays at the forum at aroundcomics.com. Coming up next week, get ready to hear from the man who made Wolverine fun again, is now taking over The Flash, Mark Guggenheim.
He's googie great. He's googarific.
Google Googan.
If you will.
If you will.
Gorders.
Gorders.
Stop it.
Check the search track.
And then in 2 weeks, we'll be hopefully having our New York Comic Con wrap up. So look forward to that.
Yes, yes.
Is one of us like, what's going to happen that we might not do that?
We're gonna kick Chris off the show.
Oh,
he's
God.
Not so sure.
Hey,
about
we're getting a Morse code message.
Dun, 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 dun.
I believe that's the president.
Don't ever call me Guggenheim again.
Yeah. Gardner Fox is sending a message.
Well, thank you again to Borders. Borders is your source for the best original graphic novels, manga, deluxe hardcovers, and trade paperback collections. Not only will you find exactly what you are looking for, you'll discover unexpected new authors and series. While you're at Borders, don't forget to check out their huge selection of music, movies, and magazines. Borders isn't just a bookstore; it has everything you need for your comics culture lifestyle.
There's even women there.
Now you can save on your favorite graphic novels, manga, and more. Google Borders, or Guggenheim, for a valuable coupon, and always remember to check Borders first. To find a store near you, go to www.borderstores.com.
Or you can go to aroundcomics.com. We've got a store located there.
Yes,
or
we do.
Or you can call me.
Or call Tom.
Call okay. There's the Borders that I know on Lawrence. I can't find it.
It's right by the Aragon. Everyone, actually it is by the Aragon.
It is
everyone, thanks, Colin Bunn, John Suntras, Tom and Sal. As always, it's been a fun time. Everyone,
and thank you, Mark Guggenheim, for having a silly name we can
make
fun of.
There you go. Happy birthday, Sal.
Thank you,
gentlemen.
Happy
birthday.
Thank you.
He's gonna.
I hope you enjoy the cake.
Everyone, have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again on Monday with another new episode. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in
and around
Tom's Look Around Cafe.
If you'd like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time, and the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Love you, baby. Yeah. Why you got my love and left me alone? Why you got my left alone? I know that you don't love me. Baby, love you one more time.